This will be a two-part series, about 10 minutes per part. And our subject is simply the name for the holiday that is upcoming, the holiday Rosh Hashanah, but the name that the Torah uses, Yom HaZikaron. In Parshas Emor, Perek Chaf Gimel Pasuk Chaf Dalet, the day is called Shabbason Zichron Terua. And we're focusing on the word Zichron, which means the memory of, not so much the word Terua. Actually, the Gemara does not learn out the laws of the Terua, in other words, the shofar from this spot. It learns out those laws from Parshas Pinchas, where the day is called Yom Terua. For here, we are really focusing on the concept of Zikaron. In our tefillah, the day, of course, is called Yom HaZikaron. And in all the additions that we add in the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, we constantly refer back to this notion of God remembering us, a day of remembering, a time of remembering. For example, in the first edition of the Shmoneh Esrei in the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, we say, Zachreinu L'chaim, remember us for life. And then in the second edition, we say, Michamocha Av Harachaman, who is like you, merciful Father? Zocher Yitzurav L'chaim Barachmim, you remember your creations for life with great mercy. We continue, and of course, in the Brach of Ata Bechartanu, we say, V'titein Lenu Hashem Elokeinu, Be'ava Esyom HaZikaron Hazeh. That's the name of the day, Yom HaZikaron. Of course, in Yalav Yavo, Zachreinu Hashem Elokeinu Bo Latova. Remember us for good. And of course, the ending of that bracha, Mekadesh Yisrael V'Yom HaZikaron. So we don't need any more proof to know that this day is a day of remembering, not just a day of judgment, not just the beginning of the year. What's essential about this day, it is a day that Hashem is remembering us for good. Now, the question must arise. Using that word, that image of memory, to describe Hashem's compassion on us, that Hashem will only remember us for good, will promises, in a sense, makes a bris with us, Zocher HaBris, we say, that He will ensure that this day He does remember all the good things. In fact, the promise that Hashem has made to us, that Hashem will remember the good things that we've done, is alluded to in the Gemara, where this day is called Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah, in contrast to, let's say, Pesach and Sukkot, which are not called Yom Tov Shel Pesach. It's Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah because Hashem, in a sense, made a promise that on this day He will remember the good parts, and therefore, this Yom HaDin will become a Yom Tov for us, for Klal Yisrael. He's guaranteeing rachamim in the way He remembers us, and therefore guaranteeing that this day of judgment will be a good day, as opposed to, God forbid, a tragic day for us. But when we speak about Hashem's memory, we are at risk of confusing ourselves very much, because we can't possibly state that God can forget something, or get distracted by more important things, and therefore not remember little details of our life. Even the very concept of Hashem remembering something from the past implies that Hashem is working with a past and a present and a future, and that itself doesn't make any sense, because we know that Hashem is timeless. And so Hashem doesn't need a special day to remember us. He doesn't forget anything. Nothing is ever hidden. And so what do we do with this word? And how do we think about Rosh Hashanah? What's happening on Rosh Hashanah? Hashem judges us based on His memory, so to speak. So memory is even more primary than the notion of judgment. So it behooves us to know what we are speaking about as we would like to daven with kavana and stand in shul concentrating and kind of having a feeling of what is happening to us today. And what does it mean that Hashem is remembering us? And so we're going to start in this first section with analyzing the concept of memory and maybe getting a glimpse into the concept of the Olam HaEmes and the notion of time in general. Now, let's talk about our memory, because we can only use our memory as some type of tool to help us get a picture of what we must mean when we speak about Hashem's memory. So how does our memory work? Think about it. Well, it certainly is a a tool, or certainly a quality that the mind has. The mind has the ability to conjure up an image of something from the past. It could be a recent past. It could be a distant past. It could be imagination of what the world looked like when it first was created. We have the ability to remember something that was either happened to us or described to us, or we saw a picture of. We can remember a picture of something we saw, or a story we heard, or an image, or an event. But what that really means is that nothing is relegated to the past. It can live again in our minds. In fact, a person is very capable of not just remembering a past incident, let's say, but then experiencing the very same feelings that originally went along with that incident. For example, the same happiness or excitement or fear or sadness or understanding that a person had way back when. And when a person spends the time remembering that event, they can have the same feelings. In fact, they might even have the same physical reactions. A person might tremble or break out in a sweat or become embarrassed just by virtue of thinking of something in the past. So, firstly, there is really nothing relegated entirely to the past. And especially because everything that happens in the past has ramifications and effects throughout, all the way till the future. But the event itself can live in our minds at this point, right now. And this is obviously closely related to imagination, because we can imagine an event that hasn't yet happened yet and feel it also at this moment. We can imagine our wedding or our child's wedding or some great, wonderful day in the future. Or, God forbid, some terrible disaster looming, you know, in front of us. And so in our minds, at this very moment, everything can live as if there's no past and there's no future. Now think about it. Let's say there was a human being, a man or a woman, who lived a very, very full life. And after 80 years of learning and knowing and teaching and having a family and raising children and traveling and tasting all kinds of unusual foods and hearing music and lectures and art and being fully exposed to the world, and even perhaps, let's say this person made huge contributions to society, they cured a terrible disease, this person can be said to have lived a full life, right? But let's say at an old age, this person is struck with total amnesia. Now, for this person, did they cure a disease? Did they travel the world? This person knows nothing of it. Nothing at all. This person doesn't even know where their children are. Total amnesia. If the mind goes blank, if there is no memory, for that person, did they ever live? No, that person has no recollection that they ever lived or contributed anything. And what we're saying is, in the end, all we are in our own self-perception is the story we can tell of our lives. All we are in our own minds, our own self-awareness is directly linked to the story we can tell, our narrative. And if we can't tell a story about who we are and what we've done, we have no self-awareness, and for ourselves, we don't even exist. We don't exist to the most primary person, our own selves, that lived our lives. Well, that is the first step in understanding a little bit about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's memory. A person can live a full life here, no question about it. But in an essential way, that entire existence can be as if it never happened. Now, before we explain this, let's talk about the concept of past, present, and future. Because existing means existing now in a person's mind, at this moment, memory, remembering, having a story to tell. If there's no hove, if there's no knowledge now, there was no life at all. There is no self-awareness. The person doesn't exist and never existed and has done nothing. What is hove? What is present tense? Well, we always say that time is divided into three categories: past, we know what that is, present, and future. Simple categories that help us organize our thinking process. But if we really delve down into this subject, we will discover, surprisingly, and it's a little bit unsettling, that actually there's only past for us and future. Because the present tense, the now, doesn't exist, cannot exist for a human being. Look, the words that I am speaking right this moment, as soon as your brain processes them, they're gone. A second or two have already passed. You can't hold on to the moment now. As soon as you understand the experience of this particular microsecond, it's already in the past. It's something that just happened. Really, all we have is the past, which happened already, and the future, which lays ahead of us, moving past us, and we have no ability to hold on to it. We as human beings have no hove. We have no present tense. I know the therapists and the psychologists all tell us to live in the present, but that's a manner of speaking. We can't live in the present. The present slips through our fingers like sand, like water. It's already past. And this is a little bit of the desperation that man feels in the depths of his heart. And Rav Hirsch explains that the reason Chazal say that when we plead at a funeral with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Macha Hashem Dima Me'al Kol Panim, please wipe away the tears finally from all the faces. Chazal say there are afilu d'mos shel simcha, even tears of joy. And Rav Hirsch explains that tears of joy are directly linked to this concept of not having any hove, not having any present tense. Look, even if a person is at this moment experiencing bliss, they've just had a child after, I don't know, a couple of decades. There's a huge refuah shalema, and a person who was thought was hopeless is going to be fine. There was a great yeshua in terms of a looming tragedy that was averted. A person had a financial turnaround. And the person at this moment has what they need. They're enjoying their health, their child, their success. And they cry. And Hirsch explains that they cry because they know deep in their heart that although they're holding, for example, that newborn perfect baby right now, and it's the answer to all their prayers, they have no way to ensure that they'll be holding that baby alive and well in even 5 minutes from now. There's no way to guarantee that the joy we have at this second can be maintained. We can't maintain it. We can't stop our parents from aging, and we can't stop life from marching on past us, and we can't guarantee that anything stays as it is. That's the source of tears of joy, demo shel simcha. You know, we're so happy now, but we're so temporary. We have no hove. In contrast to this, the olam ha'emes, the true world, is called havaya. That's not Hashem's name. It's a form of the word hove. It's all present tense. Everything is present tense, which means that there is no moment that passes. Part of the joy of the schar, the chaye olam haba, is the fact that all the satisfaction we have there for what we've done here never ever slips through our fingers. There is no past and there is no future. It's all hove. Saying Hashem is avar hayava yihyeh really means Hashem is hove all the time. Everything is constant, unending, unchanging, permanent, eternal, and lasting. That everything there, everything in the next world is something that we have forever, and it doesn't age and it doesn't erode like life here. So the first notion is that to exist is to exist in a way that is forever, that is eternal, that is changeless. To exist in the hove. And that is, of course, directly linked to the concept of memory, bringing something into the hove. We'll stop here for part one. And part two will apply this concept to the notion of Hashem remembering us and the kriya of the second day of Rosh Hashanah.